There we go. Good morning. My name is Josh. I'm our adult ministries pastor here at CORE, and I'm so glad that you're joining us this morning. Hey, we've all had a neighbor before. We've all had maybe many types of neighbors before. Maybe you're lucky enough to have had a really good neighbor. Maybe you've had some more interesting neighbors, and I just wanted to categorize a few of those neighbors, if you're all right with that, just to like start off this morning. Maybe you've had the over-friendly neighbor. Like, you invite them into your house, and it's a lovely time for like an hour, because that's what you've allotted for them to come over, but then it turns into an hour and a half and 2 hours, and now they're like approaching bedtime, and they're like still hanging out, and you're like, hey, we need to go to bed, but they're just like, hey, we love hanging out with you, and then they stay in your house after you go to bed, because we've all experienced the over-friendly neighbor. Maybe you've encountered the mysterious neighbor. Right, the mysterious neighbor where you don't know what their name is, you don't know who they are, you don't know what they do. All you see of them is when the UPS or Amazon driver drops a package off at their door, they like creak open the door, their arm gets out, grabs the package, goes back inside. For all you know, they're a secret agent. You have no idea who they are. Maybe you've had the informant neighbor. The neighbor where they know all of the gossip, all of the tea that's going on the street. They know who's moving in. They know who's moving out. They know who doesn't like who. If you need news, you go to your informant neighbor because they have all of it. Maybe you have a neighbor who is the loud pet owner. If you are this person, no shame, but I'm going to talk about them. They might have one dog or five dogs. Or 15 dogs, and every night at 2 a.m., those dogs get louder and louder, and it's like an alarm clock that wakes you up, and you're like, well, there's the dogs again. Maybe you are those person, or that person. We're really glad that you're here this morning. Maybe you have the Christmas all year round neighbor, that neighbor who celebrates Christmas so big in December. They put up all the lights, the wreath, the decorations. They're a lovely neighbor to have when you drive by in December, but then they're still celebrating it in June, July, and August, and they never take their lights down. It's just Christmas all year round. Or maybe you have the neighbor, the loud neighbor, or the loud car neighbor. And you're like, hey, when I moved to Shelby, when I moved to Ohio, when I grew up here, I didn't think there were earthquakes here. And I've got news for you. It's not. It's just your neighbor without a muffler, and he has an old truck, and he wakes everyone up. We all have neighbors that have been in our lives, have been out of our lives, where we experience some are different than others. Some are good. Some are, well, some we need to work on loving. But we all have experienced this before. But what we also know is that neighbors, it's bigger than just the person living next to you or across the street from you. A neighbor is the people that we encounter on a daily, weekly, monthly basis. The people that we do life with, the people that we see often, the people that we see not often. Our friends, our coworkers, our enemies, our acquaintances, our family, and the list goes on and on of these people who we could consider our neighbors. And maybe you've heard this a bunch of times, that our neighbors are people who are loved. And we need to love our neighbors, and we need to be kind to our neighbors, and we need to figure out what to do with our neighbors, whatever category they fall in, of that list of stereotypes of neighbors. And that's what this series is all about. We're finding our people, and we're loving our neighbor, no matter the circumstance, and no matter the position of our life at any given moment. Today, I want to talk about this idea of loving your neighbor. Because you've heard it said, love your neighbor before. You've heard this, whether you've been in church or whether in any other place, this is a common phrase, and I feel like we can all answer this. We can all answer, like, what is loving your neighbor? And yeah, we could give a general definition to what it means to love your neighbor. But I think what's harder to answer when it comes to this phrase, love your neighbor, is the questions that follow after. It's like, why should we love our neighbor? Or how should we love our neighbor? Or when should we love our neighbor? And if we can't answer those questions, we start to lose sight of what it means to love our neighbor. Like, when we start to lose sight of definition, or if we start to lose sight of purpose of anything, it starts to become unclear about what it means and the direction that we're heading and how much purpose it has in our lives. And the same is true for our neighbors, for our community, for our friends, for our relationships, that the moment we can't answer why we should love our neighbor, when we should love our neighbor, how we should love our neighbor, the moment that we stop answering those questions or are unable to answer those questions is the moment the value decreases, is the moment that community, the value of community decreases in our lives, the moment that friendship in your lives decreases. And what we want to try to do is work against that, because you can look around and you can see this trend. You can see this, that people are maybe losing sight. People are maybe losing sight and value in community. People are maybe losing value in friendship. People are losing value in relationships. And if you look around and you're like, yeah, I kind of see that in the world today, and you might be a part of this. You might see this in the general public, but you might be a part of this thing of like, you look at your own life and you say, I don't know if I value community as much as maybe it was valued before in my life, or back when I was really connected to a lot of people, or when I was close to a lot of people. Maybe you've made statements like, you know, I don't have any really good friends, or I don't feel known by anybody, or I don't trust anybody. I just don't feel like I have anybody that's close to me, anyone that I can trust. And that is probably a reflection of how you see community and how much you've invested in community. And I think we've gone and shifted from this idea that community and loving your neighbor and relationships is essential to community has become optional. It's like no longer this is a must-have in our lives. It's like, it would be nice, because we have a list of priorities. We have a list of things that we do every single day, every single week that we have to keep up with. We have work, we have hours of work, and then we go home and we take care of our families, and that's a big responsibility. And then, of course, we have to sleep, because sleeping is important. We got to get sleep in. And then you throw on kids' activities or other activities that you're involved in, that you're doing on a weekly basis. And then we all feel entitled to, like, we need some downtime. We need to rest a little bit. We need to just have some time to ourselves. And then at the end of the list, at the end of the priority list, might be community. And at the end of the day, we've all had long days where we get to the end and say, well, we could invite this friend over for dinner, or we could go out and do something with them, a list of different things that you could do with them, but then it's like, I'm pretty tired. Maybe I'll try tomorrow, or maybe I'll try next week, or maybe I'll work towards that in the future. And it drops to the end of our priority list, and it no longer is essential. It's optional, and it drops, and now we're affected because we start to say those things like, I don't have any really close friends, or I don't feel known by anybody. And before you write it off and say, community is so important to me, community is something that I thrive in and I love community, you should ask those questions of you. Put those statements in question forms. Do you have any really good friends? Can you trust people? Do you feel known by people? And if the answer is no for any of those, well, maybe you have a misstep when it comes to the way that you see community in your own life. Maybe it's those questions. Maybe it's also the thoughts or the words that go through your mind when it comes to people that tells you whether or not you have a right or good perspective on community. You might say things like, they or those people, like those people are responsible for that, or they do this, but I do this, or those people are over there and I'm over here. And every time we use that kind of language, we build a wall in between us and someone else. And now there is distance between us, and there's no room for a possibility of relationship or stepping into community with someone that's different than you, someone that believes something a little bit different than you. And what we're ultimately doing is we're putting them in a big general bucket and saying, those people don't belong with me. Or they're not as valuable to me. So I'm going to classify them that way. And it's unhealthy to view people, God's creation, as just a bucket of generalized people. Maybe it's the words that you say to yourself or the phrases that you say to yourself that determine how you see people, or they let you know how you see people. If you've ever found yourself saying, you know, I don't really like to be around people, like it can be a trendy thing to say, but if you find yourself saying that often, or maybe you say, you know, I just don't like people. People are not for me. Or I hear this a lot, like, hey, I'm an introvert, so I don't like spending time with people, so I like to stay at home and not spend any time around people. As much as those things might feel okay to say, I think they're destructive. I think they get in the way of relationships, and ultimately, they pull us away from something we were made for. And in our lives, we should ruthlessly eliminate anything that stands in the way of us building relationships with other people. Be it the way that we see other people or the way that we see ourselves, we should take away the excuses that hold us back from building community. Because it's so important. Community is so important, and it shouldn't be optional. It shouldn't be something that we just think, hey, I may or may not like this, or I may or may not do it. We should begin this trend moving back into essential. Why? Because I think we were created for it. I said this a few minutes ago. I think we were created to be in relationship. I think we were created to be in community with other people. God created us that way. And here's the truth, is that anytime we step away, you know this, anytime we step away from something that we were created to do or made for, we get down the road and then we look back and we say, how did I get here? How did I get to where I am now? When we step away from what's ingrained in us, what's in our DNA, what we are made for, we start to look back and have regrets of like, man, that didn't feel as good as I thought it was. And I'm down the road and now I've made some mistakes and now I don't have any friends and now I don't trust anybody. And now I'm in this position where I am lonely. And I feel bad about where I'm at. And I don't want that for you, and I know you don't want that for you, so we have to start working back to this way, the way that we were made to live in community with other people. And today we're gonna look at the big why behind this. That if we're supposed to love our neighbor, we wanna be able to answer as we leave today, why should we love our neighbor? Why should we take time to do that? Why should we invest in our friends? Why should we invest in community? Why should we love our neighbor? We're going to look through a passage in John in just a minute. But before we do that, I want to do something a little bit different than I normally do. I want to put these action steps in front of you. But usually at the end, we're like, okay, so here's a couple things that you can take with you, that you can practice throughout your week, that you can start to put. You'll find that it makes your life better. But I want to give you a couple action steps at the beginning, then we'll revisit them at the end because of this. I want us to think critically on how community and how Jesus talks about community fits into our story. And as we listen to Jesus' words, as we kind of grasp this idea that he hands to us about loving our neighbors, I want us to think, well, how does this factor in? How does this ingrain into our story, into our narrative? So the two action steps are this, is to find your Jesus people and find your non-Jesus people. Find the people who you can surround yourself, that they believe what you do, and then find a group of people who don't believe what you do, that don't believe in Jesus. And if you're not a Jesus follower, I just want to encourage you as we work through this, if you're questioning, if you're thinking like, hey, I'm not sure if I believe in all this, this is a great opportunity to just listen and see if this clicks, see if this makes sense, see if this all works together, and see if maybe this is something that you want to investigate more. We're going to circle back around to these in just a few minutes. What I want to do is I want to read a passage in John 15, and I'm going to read it all the way through verses 1 to 14, and then we're going to work backwards, break it down a little bit, but I feel like it would be helpful for us to just go from the beginning to the end of this to get kind of an overarching idea of what Jesus is talking about. He's giving this analogy to his disciples, to his closest followers. He's like, so this is what it means. This is what it means to follow me and live like you follow me. This is what it means to rest in me and to let your life be a demonstration of this. And this is the key to it all. So Jesus in John chapter 15, this is also in your weekly if you want to follow along. he says this, "I am the true vine, and my Father is the vine dresser. Every branch in me that does not bear fruit, he takes away. And every branch that bears fruit, he prunes it so that it may bear more fruit. You are already clean because of the word which I have spoken to you. Abide in me and I in you. As the branch cannot bear fruit of itself unless it abides in the vine, so neither can you unless you abide in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. He who abides in me and I in him, he bears much fruit. For apart from me, you can do nothing. If anyone does not abide in me, he is thrown away as a branch and dries up. And they gather them and cast them into the fire, and they are burned. If you abide in me and my words abide in you, ask whatever you wish and it will be done for you. My Father is glorified by this, that you bear much fruit and so prove to be my disciples. Just as the Father has loved me, I have also loved you. Abide in my love. If you keep my commandments, you will abide in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. These things I have spoken to you so that my joy may be made in you, and that your joy may be made full. This is my commandment, that you love one another just as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, that one lay down his life for his friends. You are my friends if you do what I command." So Jesus gives this whole thing about the vine and the branches, and how God is the vine and we're the branches, and we should live from him. But before we kind of jump back into that, I feel like I want to talk about this idea or this word that if you've been in church before, maybe you've heard. If you've never been in church, maybe you haven't heard this or have no idea of what it is, but the truth is, the reality is that we are all still learning about this word and this idea because it's complex and there's not really a full understanding that we can have, and that word is the Trinity. Now, the Trinity sounds like a churchy word, and it kind of is, but the Trinity is the way that we describe God. And it's foundational to the way that we understand his characteristics in this world and in our lives. And understanding the Trinity, at least to some degree, opens the door to see how God moves in this world. And I just wanted to take a step and kind of explain this to help us understand community and relationship. And before, if you leave here and you're like, "Hey, I want to dive into this," this can be super confusing. I encourage you to dive into it, but not get caught up in like all of the different stuff. The word Trinity is not even in the Bible. It's just a way that we describe God as the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. So when we're talking about God, a lot of times we might address God as God, and it might be a singular entity that we say, like the Father, right? So the Father, and we often pray like Heavenly Father. We say, "Father, forgive them," or "Father, forgive us," and we use this language, and it's really good. But it can't just be, when we're talking about God, it can't just be the Father. Because if it was just the Father, then the Father at one point was alone. And if God is a God of love, then love cannot be just held in between or just held with oneself. It has to be shared. It has to be between other people. So if God is just the Father, then there is one point in time where he existed alone and he created us to be with him, which means he would have changed over time and we as people would be subject to him. It would be more like a ruler, relationship. He rules over us, and we are the people that allows him to rule. And there's not really a perfect kind of love that can be in that. Sure, we can be thankful. Sure, we can be grateful, but there's not a perfect love that is between a ruler and his subjects. So we can't say this, because I feel like this is more selfish than anything as a singular God. And it's why we don't just say, "Well, God's just one entity, one person. He's just the Father." So we introduce the Son, and the Son is The Son is Jesus. The Son is the Son of the Father. And when we look at this in all of eternity, we say, the Father has always loved the Son, and the Son has always loved the Father. And there's been a relationship for all of time between the Father and the Son. And this opens the door for love to come in. But the problem is that if we leave it at the Father and the Son, it's a exclusive kind of love. It's a love that's shared between two people, and it doesn't necessarily welcome in anything else or anybody else. You know, it's like between two people, there's a really intimate form of love that they're sharing, and it's exclusive. It's not inclusive towards everyone else. So we look, and then we say, okay, so we find in the scriptures that there's also the presence of the Holy Spirit. And now when we look at God and say, here's the Father, here's the Son, and here's the Spirit, now we have a love between the Father and the Son, but that love is given through the Spirit, and there's this perfect relationship. There's this perfect relationship between God the Father, God the Son, and the Spirit that is not exclusive, but inclusive. It's a shared love between three people, and now when we enter the story, when humans enter the story, there is not a need for us to be created. There is not a need for us to validate who God is. He's already perfect. He's already perfectly the Father, Son, and Spirit. He creates us to share in this perfect love. He creates us to share in this perfect relationship for all of us to enter in. And he says, look, I have created a space for you. Right in the middle. This is why I created you, not because I need you, but because I want you to share in this beautiful love, in this perfect love, this love that has existed for eternity that I want you to take part in. I think when we look at the Trinity, when we look at God as three persons in one, we can learn these characteristics, we can learn how he functions, how he works, and we can learn a lot about who God is and who he instructs us to be. In fact, Jesus talks about in this passage in John 15, verse 5, he says this. He says that I am the vine, you are the branches. He who abides in me and I in him, he bears much fruit. For apart from me, you can do nothing. And abides is like an old word that we probably don't use very often. But all abide or abiding means is to be in, to rest with, or maybe to like act according to. So like we're following Jesus' lead. We're resting in him. We're resting in God. And when we do that, we'll bear much fruit. Now, fruit is synonymous with a reward. When we bear fruit, when we abide in him, we receive reward, but this reward is not what typically we would think reward is on this earth. It's not a bigger house, a nicer car, better vacations, more wealth, more gain with material. When he's talking about reward, he's talking about this getting back to the best version of our world. The best version of humanity. The best version that he had to offer way back when he created us. And he said, hey, this is really good. This is perfect. This is how it's meant to be. He's saying, your reward will be getting a taste of my character, of who I am, of who I've created you to be. So when you abide in me, when you rest in me, you will be able to take part in that good fruit. That will be your reward. But here's what he also says is that the same is also true on the other side of that coin, is that when we don't abide in him, the other is true, that we don't belong, that our responses, the way that we live, will not be living in reality or living within the reality that God has laid out for us since the very beginning. We'll be steering away. We'll be getting away from what is good and what is joyful for our lives. And I think where that comes out in and where we can see that is the way that we respond to certain events. Earlier this week, this Monday, I was getting out of my car, heading into work, had my backpack on, had my water bottle, I was carrying a banana because I bring in a banana every day to work. In my other hand, I had a big cup of coffee, and we've all been here before. We're getting out of the car, and I dump the coffee all over me, goes down my shirt, goes down my pants. I'm soaked. I'm like, okay, what am I going to do? And our response in that moment tells us a lot of what we're abiding in or who we're abiding in, who we're resting in, whose lead we're following. Because if we're abiding in God, then our response will most likely be, it's a shirt, it's pants, it's not a big deal. At the very least, at the very worst, I have a little less coffee and I have to go buy a new pair of jeans. That's the very worst that could happen. But if we are abiding in something else, if we're living through something else, if that's where we get our fulfillment from, the result and our response will be much different. The response will be frustration and anger. Why did this happen to me? We try to blame it on something else or someone else. And maybe you've experienced this before, that when you have something bad at the very start of your day and you go through the rest of your day, you're like, I'm in a bad mood now. The rest of my day is ruined. The way that you treat people is poorly. The way that you interact with people is poorly. You're not as productive with your work. So whenever you're abiding in that, your response is clear that you don't have a joy, or that joy in that moment is not found in God. It's found in something else, and it can be stripped away from you. And why this is important, and we'll get back to why this connects to relationships in a minute, but why this is important is that when we look at our lives and we spill a cup of coffee on ourselves, that's a really small thing. But it indicates to us how we might respond when something big happens. When we experience loss, when we experience pain, when we lose someone that we love, when we lose a job, when we lose something else that's valuable to us, the way that we respond will probably reflect the way that we respond when something small happens. And none of us want to be in that position where we are just stuck fighting against ourselves, trying to find joy and peace in things that aren't going to give us joy and peace. We've never gotten to this point where we look back and say, yeah, man, I was glad that I was angry about that, or I was glad that I got extra hurt by that, or I was glad that I lied about that. Anytime that we're stepping away and not abiding in God, we always look back and have regrets, because that's not what we were created to do. Jesus emphasizes this after he says, he who abides in me will bear much fruit. He turns around and says, if you don't abide in me, this is what it looks like. He says, if anyone does not abide in me, he is thrown away as a branch and dries up. And they gather them and cast them into the fire, and they are burned. So any of those behaviors that we have, any of those responses that we have that are abiding away from God, that come out in our life that show us kind of where we stand, he says, those behaviors, those actions, they deserve to be thrown away. Crumple them up, throw them away, and they don't hold value to you. And this is where I think we don't go far enough quite usually, because we look at those and say, well, they're in the trash. And they're over there, and they're crumpled up, thrown away. But they can be used for good. They can be recycled. They'll come back, and they'll help me down the road. But like I said, down the road, it never helped to be really, really angry about something or tell a lie or steal or any of those things. So Jesus says, don't just throw it away. We're gonna let it dry up, and then we're gonna burn it. Because we're gonna destroy whatever that is, or whatever that is away from God deserves to be destroyed and is not good for you, is not good for the people around you, and doesn't belong here. This begs the question, like, okay, so how much do we need to abide in God to avoid burning up? I think when we are putting in work to abide in him, then I don't think our whole lives are a result of getting thrown away and thrown into the fire and burned up. I just think those behaviors, those responses, those actions that we keep doing that we know aren't good for us, deserve to be thrown away, to get rid of. Jesus takes this super seriously. He says, I want you to take part in what I have to offer, this good news, this good message, the reason that I created you to share in this. I don't want you to find yourself throwing your life away at things that aren't worthy, that things aren't good enough. And this is where it connects. This is where we bring it back to relationship. This is where it matters for you and me and loving your neighbor. This is where it intersects with our stories. Jesus, a couple verses down, talks about what it means to love your neighbor. He says this later on in the chapter, "These things I have spoken to you so that my joy may be made in you and that your joy may be made full. And I just want to pause for a second. That Jesus is saying, the only way that your joy may be made full is when you abide in me and experience the same sort of relationship that I have with you, with the people around you. That your joy may be made full when you follow me in this way. And the same is true vice versa. That if we don't embrace relationship and community the way that he has invited us to, that our joy will never be made full. It doesn't matter how many things we try to add. It doesn't matter how many things we try to make our life better with under our control. If we never embrace relationship like Jesus has invited us to, then our joy will never be made full. He goes on to say, this is my commandment, that you love one another just as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, that one lay down his life for his friends. You are my friends if you do what I command you. And we look at this and we say, okay, this is what being a friend requires of us. This is what stepping into relationship requires of us. And you might ask, well, do I have to like step in front of someone like to keep them from being killed? Like, is that what I have to do? Do I have to sacrifice my entire life? And I think Jesus would say, no, you don't have to do that. I did that for you. But you don't have to do that necessarily. What you need to do, I'm speaking in hyperbole. I'm speaking in extremes. What I want you to do is I want you to consider the other person when you love your neighbor. That's what it means to lay down your life. It means to have patience with one another. It means to have patience with your friends, with all of your relationships. It means you're going to slow down when they need slowed down, and you're going to speed up when they're speeding up, that you're walking alongside of them at the pace that they need. It means you're kind to your neighbor, kind to your friends. You're considering what they want, what they feel, what they need, even if it's different than you, even if it's uncomfortable for you. You're showing consideration to them. It means that you are sacrificing maybe what might be comfortable for you for them. That maybe you have to go out of your way. You have to expend extra energy at the end of the day when you don't want to invite someone over for dinner. You're like, hey, I need to do this even though I have little left in the tank because they might need it. The reality is that both of you probably need it. Laying your life down for a friend means it's not a transactional relationship. I feel like we fall into this habit that people can only be our friends if they add value to our lives. If it's like, hey, I give to you, you give to me, all these things, you add value back to me, and that's how it works. But if you don't, it's like not really worthy. But that's not how Jesus is. That's not how he invites us into relationships. He shows us grace. When we don't deserve it, he says, I have a space for you, even though you probably don't deserve it. But guess what? You're welcome anyway. Jesus says, it's not a transaction. A relationship is not a transaction. You should be working to put them ahead of you. You should be working and putting them in your life ahead of you so that you sacrifice, so that you aren't expecting anything in return. Laying your life down for a friend also means supporting someone, supporting a friend, supporting a neighbor when they're going through the low points in their lives, when they need support, when they need someone to help them, when they need someone to surround them with love, to lift them up, to mourn with them, to grieve with them, to do life with them when it's hard. And the truth is, I think sometimes we do that really well. As a community, as a church, as Jesus followers, I think we do that well. I think we actually do it well than the opposite, or better than the opposite. Because we should support people when they're down, but we should also celebrate people when they are up, when they have wins, when they have victories, when they get a promotion at work, or when they have a kid, or when they achieve something or have an accolade. Like, we should support people and celebrate their wins. It can be really hard to say, well, I'm kind of jealous of them, or I'm envious of them, or I want what they have. But we should celebrate them the same way that we would any other day and be happy for them. That's what laying down your life for someone else looks like. That's what laying down your life for your neighbor looks like. That's what loving your neighbor looks like. God is three people. in one. And he has defined relationship from the very beginning. He has defined community from the very beginning. And Jesus revealed that to us through his Spirit so that we can take part in that. And the invitation is there to say, hey, I'm not going to let community, I'm not going to let relationship, I'm not going to let loving my neighbor be optional. I'm never going to let it be optional. I'm going to always view it as essential and put it at the very top of my priority, along with the priority list, along with the other things that are most important in your lives, and not let it slip into, well, maybe I get to it, maybe I don't. I gave you those two action steps at the beginning. Find your Jesus people. We'll throw that out there. Find your Jesus people and find your non-Jesus people. And I think in order to do this, we have to look at our lives and think critically. Where does this work in? How does this fit into our story? We have to find our Jesus people. And what I mean by that is that if you consider yourself a Jesus follower, if you consider yourself a believer in him, then we have to surround ourselves with other people who believe in very similar things about God and about who he is. We were never meant to do life alone. We were never meant to walk this life through Christianity and believing in God alone. It was meant to do with other people. That was demonstrated from the very beginning. Now, what I want to make sure we don't do is overextend ourselves. And that's why we're talking about the second point there. But when it comes to surrounding ourselves by Jesus people, I think there's multiple ways that we can do that, multiple ways that we can ingrain ourselves into community of other believers that help us along in our journey, that support us, that we support them, that we pick each other up. I think the first place to start is coming to church regularly. If you come to church once a month or once every other month or twice a year, if you find yourself in that position, there's no opportunity to meet other people that are here, that are worshiping God, that are here serving him together, that are here in a loving community. It starts with consistency. And the other way that we do this here at church is we have small groups, and small groups are just groups of people who meet throughout the week at houses or here at church and have discussion and do life together and ask each other questions and get into the weeds of each other's lives to truly know someone, to build friendships, to build relationships and grow closer to God. But outside of church, what does that look like? I think it involves you taking the initiative to ask a friend to come over. Or maybe not just asking a friend to come over, but saying, hey, every Thursday night, do you want to come over and we'll share a meal together? Or we'll play games together, or we'll invite your family over and we can do a little bit of life together on a consistent basis. And maybe if a week's too much, you start with every other week, or you start with once a month, and you turn something into a consistent behavior that you do that involves you getting together with community and getting together with your friends so that you can invest in them. I think then we turn to the other side. So we have to have our Jesus community that lifts us up, that props us up, that helps us move along and abide in God better. And that's really good, but it's also really easy to get into the Jesus bubble, that's what I call it at least, where your only friends are believers and it's like you surround yourself, you're just like in a tight circle and like that's all you hang out with, those are the people, and you're like, I feel closer to God. And I feel like I'm doing a good job, but all you're doing is surrounding yourself by Jesus followers and you're not actually letting your life be a demonstration. So when I talk about finding your non-Jesus people, I think it helps keep us grounded. I think it allows us to see the world as it is and like welcome other people in and not fall into this trap where we're not exposing ourselves to anything that's going on in the world or any other people other than like the bubble that we live in. And I think it also, finding our non-Jesus community allows us to be representatives of Jesus. It allows other people to have a glimpse into our life and say, well, I wonder why they do that. Or I wonder why they respond that way. Well, when they spilled that cup of coffee, they were like happy and had a smile. Like, why in the world would they be happy and have any joy in that situation? Being around people who don't follow Jesus gives Christians an opportunity to shine the light on their lives and to say, hey, this is what I believe in and this is the difference it could make in your life and in our world. You might ask, well, how do I do that without like starting bad behaviors or hanging around the wrong people? Because that's a totally valid concern. I think for me that in the past it's looked like I'm joining a league or I'm joining a community that engages in a certain activity together. People who are not church people, people who maybe come from all sorts of different backgrounds, and you just spend time together. And after the first week, you might say hi. And after the second week, you might say, hi, how are you? You know, you're like taking steps and we're progressing. Hi, how are you? Or maybe what do you do? And after weeks of maybe a little bit of small talk, you start to build a relationship with people. And you can do this with your coworkers. You can do this with anybody that you're around, that you just start small and you work your way into a relationship that actually matters, that actually lets them see into your life and who you are and what you believe in. And if it's not joining a league, maybe it's going and being a regular at a restaurant, being a regular at a coffee shop, being a regular at the library. If you sit in the same spot once a week, every week, and just say hi to everyone that comes in, the odds are you're going to see a repeat offender that comes in to the library, comes into the coffee shop, and you say, well, hey, didn't I see you last week? And it opens the door, and that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to open the door for people who don't believe in Jesus to have an opportunity to have a relationship with, that we might be able to extend the invite to sit down, extend the invite to have a conversation, to build a relationship. If you have kids, you know what I'm about to say because you felt it before, because I am the same way. When you walk to any sort of event, it could be your kids' sports or any other event, you look at the bleachers, you look at the chairs, and you find the open space. And you want like 3 feet of space on your right, you want 3 feet of space on your left, you want some leg room in front, and you don't want anyone behind because you want to be able to lean back. I said in first service, I feel like that's why people should sit in the front couple of rows, because there's a lot of space up here. You can like really recline, but I guess no one wants to be my neighbor. you go to the game, and what if instead of sitting in the wide open space that's comfortable, you slide over two spots and you say, hey, I'm Josh. Which number is your kid? What's their name? What do you do? And the odds are that you're going to see them 2 to 3 times a week for the next 3 months. And the opportunity for 15 minutes, half hour conversations could be present every single week. And someone that you might know, you could start building a relationship with. That we have to take opportunities when we see them, and we have to schedule, and we have to be intentional about putting in opportunities in our lives to be around people who are not like us, who don't believe what we do. Because now we have an opportunity to say, look what I know, and look what I get to take part in. And maybe down the road, you might have an opportunity to invite someone to say, hey, this is better than anything you could ever imagine. This is the reality that you want to be living in, and there is a space just for you. And we can't do that if we're not around people who don't know this. So what does that look like for you? What does it look like for you to find your community of Jesus followers, of believers that pick you up, that push you forward, that you do the same, while also following your community of non-Jesus followers to be able to understand other people, to break down walls and barriers, and to show them the light of Jesus? What does that look like for you in your life? In moving community back from, it's optional, to essential, to loving your neighbor no matter what, to loving the people next to you, that live next to you, across the street from you, to loving your coworkers, your friends, your families, the list goes on and on, to loving every single one of them in their circumstance, and also putting in the effort to add to that circle to make as big of an impact in this world. What does it look like for you to love your neighbor? Even if they celebrate Christmas all year round. I'd love to pray for us, and then we'll get out of here. Father, thank you for this morning. Thank you for who you are. Thank you for your character that you allow us to see, Thank you for God inviting us into this perfect relationship that you have offered to us, that you have prepared for us. God, I pray that we would embrace that, we would abide in that, and that we would get into the lives of other people, that we would get into community with other people and let them see who we are, that we would build great friendships, that we would begin to trust people again, Lord, and that our lives would be made better because we're following your lead and investing in our neighbors and investing in community. God, we're grateful for you. It's in your name we pray. Amen.